Welcome to History in a Year, America's first 250 years.
Join us every single day as we journey from the Revolution of 1776 to the 250th anniversary of the United States.
You can find every episode and join the discussion at pointedwords.com. I'm Stephen.
And I'm Leah.
It is February 7th. Welcome to episode 38. We have spent the last week in the high-stakes world of politics and plagues in Philadelphia, but today we are going down to Georgia.
It's 1793, and the South is in trouble.
Economically, the South was struggling. Their main crops, tobacco, rice, and indigo, were crashing. Tobacco exhausted the soil. Rice was limited to the coast.
And because the crops were failing, the value of enslaved people was dropping.
This is a crucial point. In the 1780s, many founding fathers, even slave owners like Washington and Jefferson, thought slavery was dying out. They thought it was economically inefficient. They hoped it would just fade away.
But then came a young man from Connecticut named Eli Whitney.
Whitney was 27 years old. He was a Yale graduate. He had come south to work as a tutor for a wealthy family. But when he arrived, the job fell through.
He ended up staying at a plantation called Mulberry Grove near Savannah. It was owned by Catherine Green, the widow of our old friend, General Nathaniel Green.
One night at dinner, some local planters were complaining. They said, "We could grow tons of cotton here. The soil is perfect. But we can't make any money on it."
The problem was the seeds. There are two kinds of cotton. Long staple cotton has black seeds that fall out easily, but it only grows on the coast. Short staple cotton grows everywhere, but it has sticky green seeds that are impossible to remove.
It took an enslaved worker an entire day, 10 hours, to clean just 1 pound of short staple cotton by hand. It wasn't worth the effort.
Catherine Green looked at Eli Whitney and said, "Ask Mr. Whitney. He can make anything."
So Whitney went out to the workshop. He wasn't thinking about changing history. He was just solving a puzzle.
He built a wooden box. Inside, he put a roller with wire teeth. When you turned the crank, the teeth pulled the cotton through a wire mesh. The mesh was too small for the seeds to pass through, so the seeds fell away.
Then, he added a second roller with brushes spinning the other way to clean the lint off the teeth.
It was simple. It was elegant. And it was revolutionary.
With this machine, the cotton gin, short for engine, one person could clean 50 pounds of cotton in a day. That is a 5,000% increase in productivity.
Suddenly, short staple cotton was gold. You could grow it anywhere, from Georgia to Texas. You could ship it to the factories in England that were desperate for raw material.
Whitney patented his invention in 1794. He thought he was going to be a millionaire.
But here is the irony. Eli Whitney made almost zero money from the cotton gin.
Why? Because it was too simple. Any blacksmith could copy it. Farmers just looked at the design, went home to their barns, and built their own pirated versions. Whitney spent years in court suing people, but he never collected.
He actually made his fortune later by inventing interchangeable parts for muskets, but that's a story for another day.
But while Whitney didn't get rich, the South got filthy rich.
In 1790, the U.S. produced 3,000 bales of cotton. By 1810, it was 178,000 bales. By 1860, 4 million bales.
Cotton became king cotton. It was the oil of the 19th century. It fueled the Industrial Revolution in the North and in Europe.
But there was a terrible, tragic cost.
Remember how slavery was dying out? The cotton gin reversed that overnight.
Now that you could process cotton instantly, you needed massive armies of people to plant it and pick it.
The demand for enslaved labor exploded. The price of a field hand skyrocketed. The domestic slave trade began, shipping people from Virginia down to the brutal cotton fields of the Deep South.
It entrenched slavery. It made the slave owners so rich and so powerful that they would eventually be willing to destroy the Union rather than give it up.
So Eli Whitney, the Yankee schoolteacher, accidentally gave the South the economic weapon it would use to fight the Civil War.
It's the ultimate example of unintended consequences. A machine meant to reduce labor actually expanded the most brutal labor system in history.
While the South was getting rich on cotton, the West was getting angry about whiskey.
In Pennsylvania, farmers were furious about Alexander Hamilton's new tax. They didn't have cotton gins. They had whiskey stills. And they weren't going to pay a dime to the government in Philadelphia.
Join us tomorrow for episode 39, The Whiskey Rebellion, Part 1. We travel to the wild frontier of Western Pennsylvania, where tax collectors are being tarred and feathered, and the spirit of 1776 is being used against George Washington himself.
I'm Leah.
And I'm Stephen. You can find every episode at pointedwords.com, and this is our story.